The one thing he knew from his research was that the number of gears was important for using a bike as a method of training. Eventually, he decided that he should focus on that before anything else. "I haven't used a real Lucrum bike before. Is there a way I can test different gears?" Rick asked.
"Oh, I think the 8-speed will do just fine for you as a starter bike."
He couldn't afford to just be swapping out bikes, but Rick didn't want to say that. Instead, he glanced around the store. "Maybe so, but can I test to be sure?"
"Yeah, we have a machine over here."
The owner led him to what looked a bit like a souped-up exercise bike. Rick carefully got on, remembering the bike lessons he'd had a very long time ago. That had been with Uncle Frank, actually, and he found himself wondering if his uncle had been thinking about something like this. In any case, Rick began turning the pedals. It felt surprisingly easy, and he heard a slight hum from the machine. He glanced down at the dial by the handlebars, trying to figure out exactly what it meant, but was interrupted by the owner's raised eyebrows.
"Huh, that's more than I thought."
"What do you mean?" Rick asked. "What gear am I in?"
"Let me see if the machine is working. No, you're in 6th. You have some real experience with your Lucramasole, huh? Let me turn this thing up a bit."
He ratcheted up the gears, and then Rick felt it. His aura was flowing through the bike and spinning the gears faster. He just hadn't noticed before because the effect had been so small. The bike was well designed, and his aura naturally flowed through the chain and wheels, so he got used to it soon. Then he shifted to a higher gear again, noting how the process became more difficult. Rick kept shifting higher until it felt like trying to pedal through concrete. He was surprised by how much of an aura workout he was getting just riding the stationary bike. At the point where he finally gave up, he wasn't actually sure what gear he was in, since the levers weren't entirely clear to him.
What gear is this?"
26th.
The owner shook his head slightly, then his smile returned.
"Okay, it looks like an 8-speed wouldn't have been right for you. Is this a form of training for you? We don't stock them in the shop, but we could easily order a stationary machine for you. Those have over 500 different settings, enough to challenge even the top professional bikers."
"No, I do want to use it to get around."
Rick climbed off the bike, stretching his legs carefully. The primary workout had been in his aura, but his legs burned a bit from the effort pedaling.
"In that case, we should look at the 64-speed models, if you'll come this way."
After considering many options, Rick felt like he was actually getting the right bike. The one that drew him was a bland-looking black bike, but it was practical and had enough gear settings to challenge him for quite a long time. It cost him 999 lucrum, allegedly on sale from 1999. He winced at the payment and tried to focus on all the money he'd save not taking taxis or the bus. That wiped out almost all of his recent paychecks and gains, so he only had 5,500 lucrum saved. Once the bike was purchased, the owner tried to convince him to buy a ton of different gadgets and peripherals, but Rick was feeling broke despite his savings and declined them. He was already taking a risk on all of this, so he could worry about the rest after he was certain this was the right choice. Eventually, he left the bike shop with just his black chip in hand. As they walked out, Melissa clucked her tongue at him.
"Not even a bicycle helmet. You're going to crack your skull with such recklessness."
Rick snorted. "My head is harder than those helmets."
"Put on a jacket or you'll catch your death of cold, young man."
"Are you an old lady now?"
"Stop hanging around with that Melissa girl. She's a bad influence."
They kept chatting on their way back, and once they got out of the downtown area, Rick held out the chip and made his bike construct appear. For a moment, it wouldn't quite work, and he feared he'd been cheated, but it just took him several tries to get it right. After he tried it out a bit, he got his feel for balancing again, and with the bike in a low gear, the aura part was easy. Once he was steady, Melissa hopped on behind him and hugged his back. She urged him to go faster, whooping as the air sliced past them. Rick smiled, but his mind was already moving on. This was the least of his problems. Now that it was taken care of, he needed to focus on the big ones. Chapter 11. Serum and Void. Rick watched the remaining days counting down to the trial. As many different tasks as occupied his time, they seemed to pass before him as he focused on that goal. Whether or not he could take the Lucrum Authority job, whether or not he wanted to take the risk, would have a huge impact on every other choice in his life. He decided that he'd focused on the upcoming trial first, which meant setting aside using Lucrum to get rid of the aura leech or increase Graham's stake. After spending so much on the bike, he had only 5,500 Lucrum total, but what remained he saved to choose how to invest later. At least the bike itself worked admirably. His instincts for riding came back, actually aided by the fact that he needed to constantly circulate aura while riding. Even at a leisurely pace, he went about as fast as running, and when he really exerted himself, he could go faster than cars, though that quickly left him exhausted. Most importantly, it provided a good aura workout and saved a bit of money. It was too early for the bike to pay for itself or for the work to show a major improvement, but he thought it had been a good decision. Otherwise, he was frustrated by how little he could do with just a week. Maybe if he had access to some kind of secret legendary training, but as far as he knew, Lucrum simply didn't work that way. He put more effort into earning more, but only increased the strength of his Lucors a bit. At best, it was a foundation for future work. The one area he did make good progress was the aura technique the vice president had shown. He'd talked to some more people and made a visit to the library, though Heather hadn't been there to help, and had improved it further. His result wasn't perfect, but it seemed to produce exactly the same strange aura effect as in the demonstration. Hopefully, that would be good enough. Sometime later, he'd need to spend more time in the library, particularly the Lucrum section. Part of him wanted to branch out with a new core, and at minimum, he could do some research for Melissa. Her steel Lucor was nearly perfect, and she had gotten the rating of her combat core increased, so she was in a position where she could use a unique core especially for her. Then again, she was still in a position where she didn't know exactly what she needed because she hadn't decided what she'd do in life. For a few flickering moments, he envied her, but usually he was a mix of proud and satisfied. Due to his work, she was in a position where her hard work could earn her what she deserved. Her first week at the House of the Cosmic Fist had gone by without any problems, despite his worries and Jimmy's skepticism. She didn't have real combat instincts yet, but he'd taught her enough about defending herself that she was able to adapt to fighting other people. Though she'd taken a few bruises that looked worse than they were on her pale skin, her Lucra muscle was definitely growing, so there was nothing that he needed to do to help her. Meanwhile, he pushed down his own problems with relentless training. Not trying for more raw Lucrum, more sharpening his skills. None of his core rankings had increased for some time, no doubt because he'd grabbed all the low-hanging fruit and wasn't encountering real threats anymore. Taking the job might change that. He wasn't sure if that was a good thing or not. His growth was aided by the various elixirs and reagents Lisa sent for him to try. Just a bit of him had been afraid that it would be painful experiments, like his time in the underground. But she was starting with modest efforts. Most seemed to be mixes of serum, low-grade philosopher's elixir, and smaller ingredients that were supposed to slightly boost growth. He wasn't sure if they had much effect, but he dutifully recorded the things she asked him to. One of her experiments he liked immensely. It was some kind of blend of serum that left his aura feeling surprisingly sharp. Usually, serum tasted of tin cans and reminded him of days when he was dirt poor and could barely afford serum to recover. But she added some kind of mint flavor. He wasn't sure if that was an ingredient or just for the sake of taste that improved it. Honestly, he doubted that his work as a guinea pig was really worth the value of what she was giving him. But he'd been giving her training sessions for free and not taking massages in return, plus he knew she'd be insulted if he tried to pay for them. Besides, given his present challenges, he wasn't going to ignore the money it saved him. Rick realized belatedly that he should talk to her more instead of just giving reports on the mixtures she sent him. He should tell her how good the serum formulation was. She'd probably like that. But since he was getting more and more focused on the upcoming trials, he decided to just make a note on his phone about it to remind himself later. Thinking about talking to her made him consider who else he should contact for help. The situation wasn't urgent, true, but he wanted to take it seriously and not ignore his allies. He'd already talked to Uncle Frank, who seemed to be so busy that he barely answered messages anymore. Melissa and Lisa had already done plenty to help him. So, who else? Lying back on the couch, he considered his options. His boss would never help, and Henry wasn't talking to people. Most likely, the advanced Lucrum had rebounded hard on him, making his situation worse, assuming that his demonic bonds hadn't taken over. An option Rick hadn't considered for a while was Tom, the The huge fighter in the underground seemed like a good sort, even offering to heal his injuries after the Slayer match. In another life, Rick thought they might have been friends, but they just hadn't crossed paths enough. He shouldn't forget about Tom in the future, though. For a moment, he thought about Granny Whitney and just shivered. There was one other person he knew from his time in the underground, Emily. He thought about her more than he'd expected. Since they were no longer on the same team in the multi-tier tournament, they had no reason to contact each other, yet they had exchanged messages a few times. Emily had actually given him her number. It might have been awkward and made him wonder if she meant anything by it, but she'd given it offhand with that glaring look in her eyes, so he doubted it. No, they'd just made enough of a connection during the tournament that she wanted to stay in contact. She was a valuable ally, but she'd be angry if he tried to take advantage, so he resolved to only rely on her friendship in a truly dangerous situation. With only a few days left, Rick decided to finally take the elixir Damien had given him. He got medical supplies just in case there was some hidden trap or unexpected reaction, then did his meditation and exercises. Finally, he took out the box, stared at the vial for too long, and downed it in one gulp. Lightning in his veins. Next, he was aware he was kneeling on the couch and his legs ached. Why was he kneeling? Had he been running? New power was rushing through his body, and he desperately did the proper exercises to draw it into himself. Just as he'd read online, it was uniquely suited to his bunion step core. He was shocked at just how rapidly the lucor grew. Though he wanted to test his new edge, his head was buzzing too much, and he had to sit down. Such a large improvement. If he had as many of those as he wanted, how quickly could he reach a 6-digit generation rate? Receiving birthright cores was one way the wealthy gained power, but clearly there were other ways to bottle power. Then again, that elixir had been no toy. Someone like Mike would probably have gotten a huge temporary boost, but failed to incorporate it into his lucrema soul. An untrained person could have been injured or even killed by a rush of power like that. Aura addicts overdosed on that sort of thing all the time. He also knew there would be diminishing returns. Birthright cores and a few other methods followed the laws of raw numbers. You could just keep pouring on lucrum and increasing power. But the older methods, like elixirs, didn't operate that way, instead functioning more like the boost from having fought a new opponent. If he had a second identical elixir, the effect would be much less. Still, he wouldn't say no to a 6-pack of them. For a while, Rick just lay there, recovering from the buzzing. Yet, eventually he did, and he had to accept that Damien had actually given him a valuable item. Maybe not valuable to the other man, if his demonstrations of wealth weren't just for show. It was more than adequate thanks for their mock fight, so Rick had to wonder if the other young man was up to something. An instant later, he realized that was a stupid thought. Of course Damien was up to something. The question was what, and if Rick should even get involved. For the next few days, Rick worked off the buzzing feeling and got completely used to the new edge in speed. Eventually, it was the night before the trials, and he sat at home, wishing that Melissa wasn't at work so he'd have someone to distract him. He'd received a message with a location far outside the center of Branton, so he couldn't think about anything but the trials. There was no more time to prepare. Rick pulled out his phone and checked his progress. Name: Rick Hunter. Ether tier: 15th. Ether score: 298. Lucrum generation: 44,925. Effective rate: 42,952. Current lucrum: 1,709. Rick Hunter's Lucrema portfolio. Foundation: 3,575, level 4. Offensive lucor: 7,750, level 4. Defensive lucor: 16,950, level 7. Bunyan step: 8,050, level 4. Graham's stake: 8,600, level 2. Aura leech: -1,973, stage 1. Gross lucrum: 44,925. Net lucrum: 42,952. Definitely an improvement, but hardly earth-shattering progress. He'd have to hope that the actual job with the Central States Lucrum Authority didn't require anything beyond his capabilities. If it proved too much of a risk, he might have to refuse the job. When Melissa got home from her shift, she gave a loud yawn, but didn't head straight to bed. Instead, she lingered in the kitchen area, watching him.
Is tomorrow the day you do the trial with the Lucrum Authority?
Yeah. He didn't want to be curt, but he was doing his best not to think about it.
It's bright and early, right? Since I don't have to work, I think I'm going to sleep in and see how much I can recover. So for now, would you like some moral support?
Rick sat up and looked over at her, surprised even though he shouldn't have been. You mean your ether void? Not a question.
Yeah.
Melissa looked away, as if a bit shy.
I've seen how tense you are, and I want to help, but I know I can't go along. So do you want a bit of void flame? You know, in case you need to punch someone like you did Mike.
I guess I probably should. Not just for her sake, either. Rick might need every edge he could get. He started to get up, but Melissa came first. It wasn't as difficult as the first time, both of them easily falling into the old patterns they had tested. He was surprised that Melissa's flame seemed more intense than before and was reminded just how dangerous it was. Fortunately, he easily trapped it in a shell of his own lucrum and kept it safe inside his soul. If the need came, he could release it to devastating effect.
There you go, Rick.
Melissa smiled at him, then leaned in and kissed his forehead.
You'll kill it tomorrow. I'm sure of it.
Thanks, Melissa. He smiled back as she went to bed, but then sat alone. Hopefully, her phrasing hadn't been prophetic. He told himself that it was just like another job interview. He told himself more than once. Chapter 12. The CSLA Trials. Ridiculously, Rick was panting for breath. He'd been short of breath after tough fights, but normally thought of himself as in good shape. His body was well-conditioned by his regular training, and his lucors reinforced it well. Generating aura from his lucrum was as natural as breathing. If he told himself that just riding a bike would leave him gasping, he wouldn't have believed it. Yet here he was, struggling to pedal along a lonely highway stretching out of Branton. He'd started in 22nd, the highest gear that felt comfortable, confident in his strength, yet as the ride went on and on, he'd found himself shifting down. The sheer effort required to keep his aura cycling through the Lucrum bike for so long was getting to him. When Rick pushed the lever to change gears again, he realized numbly that he was already at the lowest setting and barely moving. That had felt like absolutely nothing before, the pedals providing so little resistance that it was actually uncomfortable trying to pedal. Now they felt just as stiff as at the highest setting. How tired was he? Yet there was nothing but highway in either direction. Rick forced himself to keep going, both appreciating and hating his past self. Trapped out here, still far from his destination, he had absolutely no choice but to keep pushing himself to his very limit. He only hoped that arriving there so drained wouldn't end up ruining his chances. Since he was actually getting close to the location he'd been given, Rick slowed down a bit and looked for a place to rest. Even if he wouldn't be in perfect shape, he wouldn't make a good impression arriving sweaty and out of breath. Or maybe that was just his job search habits coming back. This far outside of Branton, he could stop anywhere, but there wasn't much variety in the choices. A few areas were farmland, but plenty of others were left as natural wilderness in accordance with the local agreements. There wasn't much difference between a field of grass and a field of wheat to him, so he just kept pedaling and looking for something that stuck out to him. Eventually, he spotted it, an old gas station by the side of the road. It was so old that it didn't even have a standard convenience store, just a wooden building with a little shrine beside it. Rick turned off the highway into it and hopped off his bike. The construct condensing back into the black chip was now second nature, so he simply pocketed it and looked around. The windows were too small to see much inside. He honestly wasn't sure if the building was a home or not. It had a bench that might be a comfortable seat, though, and more importantly, a vending machine. Yet when Rick walked over to it, he was disappointed to see that they only had normal soft drinks, not a single type of serum.
"We don't have a lot of flashy drinks, Sonny."
An old man appeared from the door, leaning heavily on a cane.
"I don't get the machine updated as often as I used to."
"Oh, what you have is fine." Rick gave the old man a quick smile. "I was just hoping to take a break and looking for serum."
"Oh, I see now. I don't keep that outside, but I think I can find something for you.
Though that was a bit suspicious, Rick didn't sense any hostility from the old man, and he wasn't surprised things could be a bit quaint in the countryside. He handed over a bill, and the man shuffled back into the house. Rick sat down and waited. For a while, he thought about how funny Melissa would find it if the old man just took his money and left with it, but it wasn't too long before the owner emerged. He carried two aluminum cans of serum, covered in condensation as if they had just been taken from a cooler. Accepting them gratefully, Rick made sure to bow properly. "Thank you. Did you actually mean to give me two? They're usually more expensive than that."
"Eh? Are they? Inflation these days. No, that's my mistake, so you drink up, Sonny."
The old man set bony hands atop his cane and shifted to put his back against the side of the building.
"You sure were working hard coming here so you could use it. Are you rushing out to that meeting of something or other?"
Abruptly, Rick found himself reconsidering the man, wondering if there was more to him. The old man was dressed plainly enough and only had a generation rate of about 40,000 lucrum, with no special tricks that Rick could find. He opened the first can, sniffed it carefully, and then took a sip. It seemed to be normal serum, refreshing, but not as good as Lisa's variant. "It's a bit of a job offer," Rick answered eventually. "They're not giving us a lot of information, but this is just a trial before the real job."
"I reckon the CSLA is trying to clean up the place a bit. I don't know why they just don't use those big machines again, but I guess they have their reasons."
"Big machines?"
"Yeah, they used them, a few decades back."
The old man's gaze was distant for a while, focusing on something long past.
"Big machines that looked a bit like combine harvesters, but they floated and sucked up the lucrum spills. I thought things were getting bad again and wondered what the new versions would look like."
Rick hid his expression by taking another drink, but found himself curious. "So you've noticed a local problem? Like what?"
"Oh, just the usual. Dragon infestation is getting rowdier and jackalopes are showing up again. They're pests normally, but if they find extra lucrum, they get bigger and cause real problems. Good on you for doing something about it, Sonny."
"Honestly, I didn't know that. I was just hoping it would be a good job."
"Maybe so."
The old man kept staring over the horizon and didn't seem inclined to talk anymore. Though mildly curious, Rick never liked to pry into people's lives. When he finished both cans of serum, without the old man saying anything, he decided that was answer enough. He thanked the gas station's owner for the serum, then headed back to the road and manifested his bike again. Getting some serum in his body and a chance to cool off made him feel surprisingly refreshed. Part of him wanted to push himself to the limit again, but he had the trials coming up. Rick kept the bike down in 10th gear and approached the location at a comfortable rate, looking for something amiss. There didn't seem to be anything too amazing. He just eventually spotted a number of cars parked along the side of the road or in a grassy field. There were a lot of them. Rick awkwardly dug out his phone while riding to check the time, but he'd left plenty of extra. He was arriving early, just in case there were bonus points for it again, and apparently everyone else had thought the same thing. In fact, judging by the number of people already present, he was actually later than most. A few smiled in an unpleasant way when they saw him bike up, but Rick just swallowed his anger. Their judgment didn't matter to him, only doing the best he could. The job was supposed to be entirely based on merit, so he'd beat them on skill alone if he beat them at all. Once he reached the edge of the road, he jumped off the bike, letting it slide back into the core chip before he hit the ground, then tucked it into his pocket. A few were still giving him nasty glances, but most had gone back to ignoring him. He looked through the clusters of people, searching for patterns, and didn't see any representative from the organization yet. Damien wasn't present either, unless he was being uncharacteristically subtle. Since they were all apparently waiting, Rick just sat down cross-legged and went back to meditating. The serum had done a lot to restore him, but it wouldn't hurt to regain his focus as well. Most of the others seemed to have arrived fresh, and many were armed as if they expected a fight. They'd obviously gotten antsy waiting so long, leaving them restless. Minutes ticked by painfully until it was almost the appointed time. Still no Lucrum Authority representative, and though Rick kept an eye on the road for a sports car, still no Damien. He was so focused on the road, that he almost didn't notice when eyes began turning upward. He looked up and wasn't that surprised. Damien appeared to be skydiving toward their location, moving down at a terrible rate despite the large parachute behind him. Shifting back and forth a few times, he managed to line himself up with the center of the field. When he got close, he twisted out of the harness, leaving it to float onward while he landed on his feet.
"Are they running late?"
He grinned and pulled off his mirror sunglasses.
"And here I went to all the trouble of being on time."
Despite his ridiculous appearance, most of the others just glared resentfully or looked away from him. Rick focused on his meditation, not wanting to draw the other man's attention. In any case, they didn't have to wait long before a Lucrum vehicle swept over the nearby field toward them. This one didn't attempt to look anything like a normal vehicle, instead having the appearance of a folded paper crane. It had the strange grace of origami, too, tilting gently as it slowed down to a hover. Part of the bottom unfolded, and three people jumped out. The woman in the green pantsuit from earlier, and two men in gray suits so identical they might as well have been a uniform.
"It looks like everyone is early."
The woman glanced around at them and nodded as if she'd expected as much.
"Good. Then we don't need to waste time. We'll test your understanding of the technique three at a time. Order doesn't matter, so just line up."
The origami crane floated lower and abruptly refolded itself, becoming a sort of tent with three entrances. One of the representatives went into each one, so the way they were meant to line up seemed obvious enough. Rick headed for the line in front of the woman, since she was the one in charge, and was surprised that not many others seemed to think the same way. Did they know something he didn't?
"Most of them cheated, of course."
Damien spoke from behind him and Rick jumped. The other man laughed, but Rick didn't care. It was damn alarming that someone could sneak up on him like that.
"What do you mean, cheated?"
"They got instruction from someone else. You don't think Mr. Mysterious Vice President made that skill himself, do you? No, it was probably developed by engineers lower in the corporation. And while the CSLA isn't too corrupt, it's not above a bit of nepotism."
Damien ran his gaze over the other lines contemptuously.
"So, they bought the information about the technique from somewhere else."
Rick eyed him skeptically. "Why are you telling me this?"
"Dunno. Standing in line is boring, I guess."
Damien didn't say anything else as the lines advanced, and in any case, there was soon a new distraction. A Lucrum scoreboard manifested over the tents, again showing everyone's ranks. Rick actually felt relief as his name plummeted down the list. Now everyone could stop focusing on him. It looked like the majority of the candidates were getting 10 points for their performance of the technique, creating a massive tie at 12 points. Though Rick hadn't kept track of all the names, just by the math, he knew that some were only getting 7 to 10 points. A few received only 3 to 4 points, and some of those disappeared from the list soon after. Was that the cutoff, or had they chosen to quit?
"Looks like these pigs did a good job of cheating, huh?"
Damien spoke entirely too loudly, drawing glares from those waiting in line and those who had already finished. Rick amended his earlier thought. Everyone could stop focusing on him if Damien didn't make things worse. Before too long, it was his turn, and Rick stepped into the entrance. The woman in the green pantsuit was sitting in a chair made of the same paper-like material as the vehicle, making a moderate effort to hide her boredom. Since she looked impatient, he hastened forward to stand in front of her.
"Okay, just show me your best effort at the technique. Chop, chop."
"All right."
Rick swallowed, then raised his hands and did his best. The flow faltered a bit at first due to nervousness, but he'd practiced the thing so many times, he soon got his act together.
"There, that's the best I was able to do."
"Huh."
She glanced at the aura flow briefly, then waved it away.
"You actually tried to recreate it, instead of just getting someone to tell you."
Rick stared at her, not sure how to take that.
Is that a good thing? Was this some kind of trick test?"
"It doesn't really matter. We only care about results. I'll award you 8 points. You can step out now."
A bit puzzled by the interaction, Rick headed out. That put him at 11 points, well below the top contenders. He suspected that these early points didn't really matter very much compared to their actual work on the job, so instead he wondered what the purpose of it was. If nothing else, he'd learned a lesson about what the organization cared about. Not long after, Damien scored a full 10 points. Rick had to wonder whether he'd accomplished it by cheating or not, but wasn't going to give the other man the satisfaction of attention. As the final people finished their test, Rick began to hope there was a greater purpose to all this. If the technique had been meant to judge their flexibility, then the rampant cheating made it irrelevant. That rendered this a bit of a waste of time, and he didn't think that large corporations liked to waste time. Either the purpose hadn't been revealed yet, or they intended to keep the real purpose hidden. Abruptly, the board disappeared, the tents folded back up into a crane, and the three CSLA employees strode out onto the field. The woman clapped her hands, again silencing everyone, and spoke once she had their attention.
"Those of you who have chosen to stay, you've now taken your first step as CSLA contractors. But beyond the basic competence you've shown, we'd like to show you the objective of your work. Follow me, please."
They did so, moving further away from the road and into the grassy field. As they walked, the woman raised her hands, effortlessly performing the technique. Except, as she moved, the resonance between her hands was changing. Rick immediately realized one of the errors he'd made. The purpose of the skill wasn't to create a certain effect, it was to evaluate effects from the outside. So it was some kind of measuring or surveying technique for the types of Lucrim anomalies that they wanted to find? That would make sense. He got his theory confirmed when he started to feel something unusual. There was a spark in the air that hadn't been there before. Was this what ambient Lucrim felt like? As a kid, he'd imagined what it would feel like for the air itself to be overflowing with Lucrim, but this was strange. He glanced to the officials and noted that all three of them seemed slightly disgruntled. Either their target wasn't there, or the wrong thing was.
"It seems we have a bit of a problem."
The woman sounded like she was remarking on the weather, but she quickly caught everyone's attention.
"Please prepare yourselves for combat, in case this doesn't go well."
That said, she bent down, dropped the technique, and began working on something else. It was too quick and complicated for Rick to figure out exactly what she was doing, but now he could definitely feel a change. The air itself seemed to boil in a way he struggled to pin down, as if nearly invisible shapes struggled against one another. When he looked up, he noticed that the clouds seemed to be rotating, spinning around a point exactly above them.
"Oh dear,"
she stepped back with the mildest of disappointment.
"It seems you will all see the scope of the problem sooner rather than later. Please defend yourselves."
A few people started to ask questions or shout, but it was too late. The roiling air suddenly condensed into a beast-like shape that crouched, then lunged at one of the fighters standing nearest. As it launched itself, it gained flickering but concrete form, ending in an audible snarl. All Rick could do was put up his fists as the creatures twisted into being all around him. Chapter 13. Anomalous Threats. Rick's mind had no idea what was going on, but his body did. The air itself seemed to be gaining solidity, forming beasts that resembled nothing he knew, but had plenty of teeth and claws. Several of them had formed now, and the strange, aura-like nature of their bodies would have distracted him if his life hadn't been in danger. He had no idea what the things were or how to fight them. Yet when one of them lunged at him, manifesting with an eerie snarl, he automatically ducked aside. He barely restrained his instinct to strike it as they passed, unsure if touching them would be harmful. More monsters were forming from the central point, where the air itself now glowed in some kind of unnatural reaction. He realized that there was a monster above him a split second before it dropped, and he desperately managed to bunion step away. With a bit of distance, he hurried to reorient himself and observe. Some of the other fighters near the center weren't as cautious as he was, one man shooting at the entities while another kicked those rushing at him. The bullets did seem to impact on the partially visible bodies, and the man who kicked didn't seem to have been injured in any way. So whatever the things were, they were corporeal enough to fight. That was good enough for Rick. Wary of teeth he couldn't quite see, Rick didn't throw himself at the enemy, but he did prepare to fight back. One of the creatures was rushing across the ground in his direction, so he turned to face it. The thing leapt at his legs with a snarl. He dodged aside and kicked it in the side. His leg impacted like he'd kicked concrete, but the creature did go skidding across the ground. Rick leapt after it with a bunion step and stomped down as hard as he could, trying to disable it while it was still stunned. To his surprise, his foot smashed through the creature's head. It felt like he broke through a shell, and instead of gore, there was only a burst of released power. His shoe and pant leg were a bit scorched, but otherwise, there was no trace of the creature. Then they weren't huge threats alone, but their numbers were growing too quickly for him to relax. Two more rushed at him, and Rick found that he actually hesitated. His base instincts had carried him this far, but with time to think, he realized that almost all his combat experience was against other people, not against creatures that ran so low to the ground. The first launched itself at him, and Rick met it with an elbow to the head. He felt a burning scrape against his skin, but the strike landed well enough and knocked the creature away. Though he'd planned to kick the other one, it had arrived faster than he'd expected and slashed at his legs. Rick barely evaded with a quick hop back, then kicked out to knock the creature flying. An instant later, he realized that there was a third one flying at the side of his head. He ducked low, just aiming to dodge, yet it reached out lower than he expected and claws raked his shoulder. It didn't feel as bad as many of the blows he'd taken, but it still hurt. Gritting his teeth, Rick forced himself to keep moving, going after the creature and stomping it as soon as it landed. One of the others was returning, its growls giving him a bit of warning. Rick whirled to kick at it, but the hasty movement prevented him from getting much power. His kick just thumped against the creature's side, and it immediately reached out claws to begin tearing at his leg. Worse, he had a glimpse of the flickering head opening to clamp down on his knee. Setting his other foot firmly, Rick burst off the ground with a bunion step that sent his leg tearing through the creature. His momentum actually sent him flipping heels overhead, and when he landed, he felt a twinge in his hips. Using a bunion step with only part of his body had been a risky move. Apparently, it worked, but the middle of a battle was not the time for such experiments. Still, it seemed that he'd earned himself a bit of breathing room, so Rick kept up his guard and looked around the battlefield. Fighters and flickering monsters were scattered everywhere in a pitched battle. He saw people fighting with fists, bats, swords, and guns. Honestly, that last one worried him more than the monsters. Friendly fire from Lucrim bullets could be a serious threat. There was an unarmed man who was positively swarmed with the things. He seemed to have a defensive core even stronger than Rick's, because their teeth and claws weren't even damaging his clothes, but there were so many climbing up his body that he could barely move. Rick went to go help him, and then a flame aura lit up around the man, incinerating all of the creatures. Okay, he didn't need help. An older man successfully beat down one of the creatures with a baseball bat, but another leapt at his side, tearing away his weapon. As he dropped, the man managed to catch the creature's jaws before they reached his face, but he was pinned down. Rick launched himself into a bunion step that tore through the creature, then picked up the bat and handed it to the old man. Though there was blood running down his forehead, the older man grasped the bat and used it to pull himself up, still able to fight. While he made sure the man was all right, Rick kept looking around the battlefield. Unsurprisingly, Damien was doing fine, spinning among the monsters gracefully. It looked way more like movie choreography than any real martial art to Rick, but even glancing blows seemed to carry a heavy impact that sent creatures flying if they weren't destroyed entirely. He'd be fine. The fact that not all of them were destroyed made Rick pause and look more carefully. There were more creatures emerging from the central point. He didn't see any of the CSLA employees anywhere near it anymore. But though it was difficult to determine much about the semi-visible creatures, Rick was quite sure that the ones emerging from the boiling air were getting bigger. Whatever was happening, it seemed to be increasing in strength. Sounds of feet rushing toward him pulled Rick's attention back to the ground, where he saw several more of the creatures rushing at him in a pack. He turned to face them, bracing himself, and then flinched backward as a wall of green energy burst past him. It annihilated all the creatures, but it had nearly gotten him, too. His heart was pounding, and he swiveled to find the source.
Oh, shit, sorry.
There was a woman wearing casual clothes and a baseball cap, but the striking thing was her unstable, spiky aura. She waved both hands in what looked like a sincere apology.
This technique is really hard to...
Her aura wobbled unsteadily, then the side of it exploded in a wall of power that threatened a different direction. Rick realized that the instability was actually intended, like the entire technique oscillated to build up more power. He wasn't about to get closer to her, but Rick decided to call out to her.
"Can you aim that at the source?"
"I've been trying."
She winced and readjusted her hat, making her aura wobble even more violently.
"Shit, I shouldn't have tried to use this."
A short but immensely muscular man appeared beside Rick with a grim expression.
"You have the right idea, kid. We need to take out the center, whatever it is. Can you run interference for us?"
"Maybe,"
he answered cautiously, noting that several others had apparently gotten the same idea. The stronger fighters, many much stronger than him, were tearing through the dog-like creatures and closing on the central location. Yet in response, the disturbance in the air seemed to become more chaotic as well. Given a moment to think, Rick tried to examine the creatures more carefully, yet he couldn't determine much about them with his normal skills. They had nothing like a generation rate. However, he was willing to bet that the bigger ones emerging were stronger than the others. Something even larger twisted into existence, this one hunched over but walking on two legs. Rick considered throwing himself into the fight to help and wondered what Melissa's void flame would do against these things. Yet before he did so, he found his gaze wandering further. There was the woman who led the exercise, standing calmly and doing something on her phone. He didn't see her co-workers, but was pretty sure they weren't involved in the fight. Whatever this was, it wasn't actually a threat to them. Was this just another test? A demonstration of some kind? He only had instincts to go on, but Rick decided that he wasn't going to use his emergency technique or risk his life too much. Not if there wasn't anything truly at stake. When they went closer to the center, Rick parted from the muscular man and sought out a target. They might be getting graded on this, so he needed to keep fighting. But instead of taking a major risk to win a fake battle, he'd consider it as another opportunity to train. Rick kicked aside a dog-like entity and made his way to one of the larger ones. It was a bit shorter than him, not as large as the massive creatures near the center, but the way it was hunched over, it looked like it outweighed him. When he got close, it swiped at him, but he easily ducked under the slow movement and hammered an elbow into its face. The creature shifted back a bit, but didn't fall. There was no time for another blow. Rick just launched himself forward with a bunion step, his elbow hammering the same point. This time he heard something crack and the creature fell back, but not enough. One claw swiped out at him, and though he blocked, he felt lines of stinging pain along his arm. Rick kicked at where the creature's knee might be, and though the blow connected, it wasn't disabling. Another blow struck his arm, and though his defensive core held, it knocked him to the ground. Before he could push himself up, the creature fell on top of him. They traded vicious blows, too close to block effectively. This one felt like it was protected by a hard shell, but Rick could feel it cracking. Ignoring the pain, Rick struck repeatedly, hoping to kill the creature before its blows took their toll. And then a curtain of power descended over the battlefield. Rick felt nothing but raw lucrum pass by him, but all around him the creatures hissed and screeched as they evaporated away. It was as if a massive hand simply flattened all of them, leaving the humans untouched. He carefully got up, nursing his injuries, and saw that it was completely over. Not only were the monsters gone, there was no trace of the atmospheric disturbance. His senses were numbed by the overwhelming display of power, but he could guess at the source just based on logic. When Rick turned to find the woman in the green suit, he wasn't surprised that she had a hand raised in front of her. No aura, but she obviously didn't need it.
"This has been a demonstration."
She sounded like she was just announcing another step of paperwork, even when the fighters across the battlefield turned on her. Some were angry, but the Lucrum Authority employee obviously didn't care.
"We wanted to make it clear why we insisted that only those with combat skill attempt this job."
"You hired us to fight monsters like these."
Rick looked and saw that it was the old man with the baseball bat, glowering at her. The woman shook her head.
"Realistically, you aren't likely to run into a problem anywhere near this severe."
There was something in her tone that made him wonder if they'd seen just how severe it really was.
Excess lucrum can lead to local pests becoming more dangerous, however, so we don't want incompetent agents blundering into these situations and making them worse.
A woman in her 40s, wearing a tank top, who didn't appear to have been touched during the fight, folded muscular arms and frowned.
Was this the last test? Are we employees now? Right now, all of you are eligible, but you need to prove yourself on the actual job.
The woman tapped on her phone, and the lucrum ratings board popped up again.
You have 30 days to find and then report a lucrum anomaly. Use these.
She gestured to a box of dull marble spheres that one of the aides brought beside her, then continued.
Outside of emergency situations, you won't be tasked with eliminating the anomalies yourself. Once you locate one, you'll begin collecting a salary and be eligible for bonuses based on future performance. After this, no more tests. But the CSLA doesn't hire anyone who isn't proven.
Rick glanced at the board and saw that everyone appeared to have been awarded 5 to 10 more points, perhaps based on their performance in the fight. He had to skim down to his name and saw that he'd received 7, which wasn't bad. As everyone adjusted to the fact that the battle had just been a test, many started looking at the top rankings, but Rick didn't care about that. Instead, he focused on the fact that they'd finally revealed the essential information. His job was to find anomalies and stop them before they became disasters. If they'd thrown him against monsters on a regular basis, he would have refused the risk, but he could understand just using their proprietary technique to locate problems. More importantly, he wouldn't start getting paid until he found one. Despite his misgivings, Rick realized that he'd made his decision. This was the job he'd been looking for. He went to pick up his sphere. Chapter 14. Dinner with Emily. Deciding to try to get the job with the Lucrum Authority was well and good, but Rick quickly realized that it wasn't going to be that easy. The initial trials had filtered out people who were grossly unqualified, which was just the first step. Everyone who remained had some basic skill with aura techniques and combat ability, which wasn't enough. The simple fact was that he didn't know how to go about finding one of the Lucrum anomalies. Rick had the surveying technique designed for it, just no training for how to use it effectively. For that matter, he didn't have much training on the anomalies themselves. Fortunately, he had been looking carefully when the CSLA employee found the first one, but that was a far cry from being able to track one down himself. Looking online with his new knowledge, he was able to find a little more information about the subject. The Global Lucrum Authority might not have run a program exactly like this before, but there were other programs with similarities, plus technical discussion of the principles involved. It sounded like there was no easy way to just home in on the goal, which was probably why the company hired people to do it in the first place. He needed to find one as soon as possible so he could start getting a salary, though, at least if he was really doing this. Rick saw that some of the other candidates were just trying to brute force the problem by searching around the wilderness outside Branton. Since they had more people than him, and most were stronger than him anyway, he needed a finer touch. The next day, he needed to go to the gym, and he spent the entire shift wondering about his options. In the end, he decided that it was time to call Emily. He'd be asking her for something, yes, but hopefully it would interest her enough that it wouldn't come off as an imposition. After getting out his phone, he stared at the number for a while, then decided he was being stupid and just hit her name. It rang 3 times before Emily picked up.
Yeah?
I've got something you might want to see, a new aura technique developed by the Central States Lucrum Authority. Given how terse Emily could be, he always felt like he needed to offer her something right away or he'd annoy her. I'm not sure if it's the type of lucrum engineering you do, but I thought you might find it interesting.
And you need some help with it?
Yeah.
You're involved with something again, aren't you?
Rick sighed. Yeah, sorry. To his surprise, Emily let out a brief laugh.
Don't apologize. It makes you interesting. I'm up for it, and I assume you're in a hurry. So can you meet me after work? I'll text the location.
Sure. Yeah, that will work fine. He hadn't expected it to be that easy. But then again, Emily could be a reliable ally, for all her sharp edges. They'd fought together against a hitman and supported each other in the multi-tier tournament, after all. Soon after, Emily sent him a location that he realized must be near her work. At least, he thought so. Rick had done some basic curiosity research on Ethcom back when he was meeting Emily, but didn't know too much about it beyond that. She hadn't given him a time, but he had to assume that she worked normal business hours, which meant he needed to get moving. He grabbed his wallet and bike on the way out the door, then leapt straight over the side of the railing. For an instant, he considered manifesting his bike in midair and landing on it, but there was a good chance the thing would break under the force. No, better to stay simple and practical. The Ethcom building was on the other side of Branton, so it was no quick ride. Still, he was starting to understand how to bike in the city, and could make it. Right now, his standard speed wasn't quite fast enough to go in the lane devoted to those traveling via Lucrum-based speed, but he could maintain that speed briefly. Switching between those lanes, sidewalks, and the street, he could get wherever he needed to go. Traveling through the city by bike changed things. Since it was faster than running, he didn't get lost in his thoughts, but he also had time to look around. He was surprised to see how many street corners in the bad parts of town had advanced Lucrum stations. There weren't so many as he neared his destination, of course. At first, it had struck him as odd that a big corporation like Ethcom kept its local headquarters outside the central part of Branton, but on the way, Rick realized that might actually make sense. They might have a public-facing office in one of the bigger buildings, but their private work would be done off-site. Though Lucrum Engineering wasn't usually explosive, they might have good reasons to avoid populated areas. When he finally got close, he was a bit early. That was good, since it gave him enough time to cool down. He'd just have to hope that he didn't stink too much. Rick glanced around the semi-suburban area, then looked to the Ethcom building itself. Though he'd expected it to be more dramatic, it was really just an ordinary blocky office building. Other than the stone pillar with the company's sign, it could have been any other office. Or perhaps not. Frowning, Rick moved closer and observed more carefully. There was something about the sky. He walked partway around the building, looking more carefully, and confirmed his suspicion. There was a wall of shadow surrounding the property. It was barely discernible, but the sky and everything else on the other side was just a slightly darker shade. Whatever the technique was, it was something more advanced than Rick had even heard about. Before he could wonder about it too long, several people began to emerge from the front doors. They seemed like ordinary enough office workers, though everyone had a generation rate higher than 60,000 lucrum. More importantly, they all felt like they'd put serious work into their lucores. Rick found himself wishing he had the skill to estimate invested cores more accurately. Eventually, he spotted Emily, but she didn't come out the main gate with the others. Instead, when she saw him, she jerked her head to a side entrance, then went around the other way. Though puzzled, Rick went in the direction she'd indicated. Did she not want her co-workers to see him? In any case, when he went around to the other side of the block, Emily soon appeared. She wore her usual hoodie and slightly sour expression, which softened only a little when she saw him.
This isn't the location I said.
It was so close to your work, I figured you were just guiding me here.
If I'd meant that, I'd have said that.
Yet, after a moment, Emily smiled instead.
But it's not important. Do you want something to eat? I forgot to eat today.
It was early for him, but sure, that'd be fine.
There's a good place a couple blocks this way. Let's go.
Emily led the way, and he went along beside her, the silence threatening to get awkward. Since Emily wasn't good at filling silence, or interested in doing so, Rick figured that was up to him. So, have you had any trouble with Granny Whitney since the tournament?
Thankfully not. We both fulfilled the terms of our agreement, and that was the end of it, for now.
Emily glanced over at him.
You?
She seems to have kept to her promise of leaving me alone. Hopefully she doesn't want anything to do with me anymore.
Yeah, you want to avoid anyone in her circle.
Anyone? Rick thought about it for a moment. The American Basilisk is a gang lord, so that's obvious. I know Granny Whitney's maliciousness firsthand, but what does she actually want? That got a little shrug.
I'm afraid that's beyond my pay grade. They play games of honor against one another, and those are dangerous enough. Anything they're actually serious about is something I'd like to keep at arm's distance.
Yeah, I don't blame you. What about Alger? He just seemed to want to run his fight arena.
Especially Alger.
Emily frowned for a moment, then shook her head.
I'm not sure exactly what he's doing, but it's good you lost his interest early on.
Rick swallowed and considered telling her about their brief encounter, but wasn't sure how to bring it up. Besides, he'd convinced Alger that he didn't have what it took on two occasions now. Hopefully, the man would actually leave him alone and he could get on with his life. Meanwhile, Emily gestured for them to turn and led him into what appeared to be an old mom-and-pop restaurant. There were tables of many different varieties set around the room, some looking reasonably modern, some as if they could have come out of the 1950s, and some that were so decrepit he had no idea. Far from being a fast food restaurant, there was no screen of options, just some printed menus by the counter.
"Some of the tables are bad," Emily said, "but the food is all good. They're not very fast, though, so let's order right away."
"Seems reasonable." Rick picked up one of the menus and looked through it while Emily just ordered from the friendly middle-aged woman behind the counter without looking. The menu seemed to be mostly burgers, sandwiches, and a few items like salads on a leaflet that had been paperclipped in later. Deciding to start simple, Rick just ordered a burger. Even that was a bit more expensive than he'd prefer, but one meal wouldn't really hurt him. He turned and found that Emily had already gone to sit by a table in the corner with her back to the wall. When he went to sit down across from her, she sat back and examined him.
"So, what's this technique you have for me?"
"It's relatively simple, but I have some questions." Rick managed to demonstrate it, but the aura didn't vibrate much here in the center of town. "Okay, this is a bad place for it, but the aura vibrates along with free lucrum in the surrounding area. I guess not the lucrum you or I have, or it—"
"Yeah, I got it. Why'd you get this from the CSLA?
He blinked in surprise. "I kind of figured you'd just know about their job offer somehow."
"Nope. What's going on?"
Rick quickly explained everything that had happened to him. He found himself beginning to skim over the lucrum and fight details, yet realized that Emily was just as interested as he was. She didn't ask many questions, but her eyes kept flickering over the restaurant thoughtfully. It was surprisingly comfortable talking with her, though it got awkward as he finished the main story and wound down. "So, that basically catches you up. Was the technique actually interesting, or is it a really common thing I don't know about?"
"Definitely interesting." Emily stared out the window and began tapping her fingers on the table in a rapid pattern. "What I think they taught you is a modern recreation of an ancient skill."
"An ancient skill? You don't mean like a lost secret art or anything?"
"No, of course not. Once, warriors who fought with lucrum would do something like this with their aura automatically, sensing all the lucrum around them. But the thing is, in the modern era where most lucrum is harvested, the skill is next to useless, especially since modern sensory skills can mostly cover for it."
Nodding and understanding, Rick was about to move on when he had a random thought. "In school, everybody learns lucrum sensing in lucrum education class. Now that I think about it, that skill is very focused on sensing gathered lucrum or lucors in a person. Is that different from the ancient version?"
"Exactly right."
Emily gave him a quick smile, and he felt strangely proud of himself.
"They had cores in the past, of course, but their lucrum souls were much less clearly defined since they were constantly swimming in an environment of lucrum. An ancient warrior transported to the modern day would need some serious time to adjust."
"So they're doing the opposite to us, teaching us how to sense lucrum in the old way."
"Well, a modern version. It's less about sensing the lucrum around you than tracking down distant sources. Anyway, you did a solid job recreating what they showed you, but I have a few ideas about improving it. Not just the pieces they had, but maybe some other improvements."
Rick raised his eyebrows. "Really? You sound pretty confident."
"I obviously can't go up against all the GLA's engineers personally, but I've done a little work on this. There are some projects where people try to digitize old martial texts or recreate incomplete ones, then put them all in the public domain. Some of them deal with exactly this kind of thing."
"That sounds great. When can we start?" "Right that moment, as it turned out." Though Emily needed time to check her sources and do some work, she was immediately able to suggest changes and help him improve the technique. He felt a bit bad about how easily she put it together, but then again, this was her job. More importantly, she was obviously enjoying herself, and he didn't feel guilty about asking her for help. They'd mostly finished a stable new version of the technique when their food was brought to the table in red plastic baskets. Rick noted with surprise that both of them had gotten basically the same thing, a burger, fries, and a drink. After cutting off their work, when the food was brought to the table, it didn't feel right to dive back in, so Rick focused on his food instead. He took a bite and was surprised how good it tasted. Definitely a cut above fast food. The fries were perfectly crisp and salty as well. Emily was tucking straight into hers, though after a while, she spoke in between bites.
You like it?
Yeah, this is really tasty.
Good. We should have done this earlier. I don't have enough people to talk to about this stuff.
That made him eye her strangely. Really? Aren't all your coworkers Lucrum engineers too? He figured that they'd be far more interesting conversation partners than him, yet Emily shook her head sharply, straight bangs shaking back and forth.
You might be surprised just how many people do it as only a job. They're smart, yes, but they really don't have much passion for the work. Or maybe the years wore out their passion. I'm not sure.
That seemed to sober Emily, and she took an aggressively large bite of her burger, then glared at it as she chewed. Wanting to cheer her up, Rick searched for something that might interest her. What do you think the actual problem is? Why is more Lucrum getting through the harvesting techniques than usual?
Hard to say. The GLA doesn't give out much info.
Emily's curt answer was just a precursor, however, and he could see her mind working on it. When she finished her bite, she set down her burger and glanced at him.
I don't want to lecture you about something you already know, but it gets into technical Lucrum harvesting stuff. You know where Lucrum comes from, right?
It was too simple of a question, making him look for some kind of trick. It floats down from the sky, right? Is that wrong?
Not wrong, just incomplete. Lucrum actually hangs out in space. Then Earth plows into it as it moves around the sun, and the Milky Way moves in our galactic cluster. When it hits the atmosphere, it tends to get caught in local currents and slow down enough that it drifts roughly evenly, but not perfectly evenly.
Ah, so even if they harvest it in the upper atmosphere, they can't 100% predict it. Same as how they can't perfectly predict the weather.
Exactly. It's more complicated than weather because there are other effects, but same idea.
Emily grabbed a set of fries and jammed them all into her mouth.
Lucrum doesn't obey the laws of gravity, but anything with a major gravitational field impacts it. So the moon, Jupiter, solar events, they all have an effect. A lot of ancient astrology was bullshit, but our ancestors weren't entirely wrong when it came to Lucrum flow.
Rick sat back, just thinking about what she'd told him. He felt as though someone should have explained this to him, yet it was honestly much more than most people needed to know. Hell, most people were happy to think that Lucrum came from the bank or their job.
Plus, there are currents in space itself. Scientists can try to predict them to some degree by looking at other galaxies, but it's believed that even with perfect information, the system will never be 100% predictable. At some point, there's an uncertainty principle, so the flow of Lucrum around the planet is always subject to surprises.
Do they have any idea why there are currents of Lucrum? What causes them?
Good question.
Emily gestured at him with a fry.
The dominant theory is that it's like background radiation from the Big Bang, just random chance in the end. Of course, the end result is extremely even, which is why ancient warriors weren't weakened because they didn't know about all this. But when you're dealing with trying to harvest the entire planet...
I think I get it now. Rick took a while to eat his nearly forgotten food, contemplating everything that she'd said. Beyond getting her explanation, he thought that it gave him new perspective on what the GLA wanted. So there's a current of Lucrum or some other factor that's making their estimates be off by more than normal, and they need to hire people to find it.
Right. If this was a normal fluctuation, they'd have systems to take care of it. But apparently, now they need to gather information manually.
Can human behavior really have a major impact on all this? I mean, it's such mind-bogglingly huge cosmic stuff.
People have an impact at the very end of the process.
Emily sucked on her straw and seemed surprised that it made an empty rattle. They'd been talking longer than either of them had realized.
Lucrumosols still tend to draw it, which is why there will be more anomalies around cities than, say, the middle of the Pacific Ocean. But that last part is just theory.
It's better than anything I had. Does that mean that in the old days, cities would have been richer environments for Lucrum?
It's the exact opposite. With so many people grasping for it, the flow was reduced. That's why masters in the stories would go out into the wilderness or up mountains where they could draw the Lucrum first.
They kept talking, even after they'd finished their food. Rick realized that they basically never spoke about anything but Lucrum techniques and theory, but honestly, he didn't care. He enjoyed learning more, and Emily always seemed much less severe when talking about a subject she enjoyed, her expression transforming from a glare to intense focus. Eventually, he'd have to go back to work and figure things out. But for now, this was enough. Chapter 15. Finding Lucrum Anomalies. Kneeling in the dirt, Rick did his best to focus on the technique and not let his mind wander. Unfortunately, this was the third time he'd taken an aura sampling and gotten no good information. Part of him had been hoping that it would naturally lead him toward an anomaly, like a compass in a video game, he supposed. But instead, every location just gave him an ambiguous reading of local activity. He'd tried to take multiple readings at regular intervals to see if there was a trend, but what looked like a growing amount of resonance turned out to be just local variation. After getting frustrated, he'd called Emily again to check, but he wasn't doing anything wrong. There simply was no easy way to find the pockets of excess lucrum. Again, he understood why the corporation needed more people to solve the problem. Rick stood up and brushed off his pants irritably. Clearly, he needed a different approach, but he was out of time. If he wanted to get back to the gym in time for his shift, he needed to get moving now. After walking back to the nearest highway, Rick manifested his bike and began heading back. As he made the long trek, he found himself considering, yet again, whether or not it was a mistake to try to do both jobs at once. Almost all the other candidates he was aware of were focusing entirely on finding anomalies. If he didn't need to head back in so often, he might have made more progress, but quitting his previous job with no guarantee of an income just wasn't something he could make himself do. While biking back, an alternate idea occurred to him out of nowhere. Maybe he was approaching this from the wrong angle. If lucrum anomalies could be easily found via aura techniques, the GLA would probably already have done so. Maybe it would be more effective to use other sources of knowledge to get close, then home in on the source from there. Though he wanted to try that immediately, he couldn't afford to miss his shift, so Rick just kept biking. He shifted up another gear, even though he knew his muscles would regret it later. At least he was